Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up? What's up? Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you. And today we have, once again, we brought back, we have to have some gender bias in the show. So we brought back the goddess herself, the goddess of grains, Angie Setzer, vice president at Citizens Elevator. Angie, what's up?
Yo, just, working my way through harvest here as the cash grain handling sort of gal that I am. And, waiting to see what happens after last week's super fun election. So just kind of living the dream right now is what I say.
You're always living the dream. I mean, you got a newborn, not a newborn anymore, but you got a baby and you got Carl. So you're just living the dream all the time, you know? So
all the time I am.
All right. So first of all, obviously we have a new president since last time we talked. And, you know, I think that he will be better for the farming industry over the long haul. What do you think?
Oh, I think so. I mean, we talked going into the election. You know, my opinion of it, of course, was I was somewhat impartial in the sense that I wasn't a fan of both of them for different ways. But when it comes down to a regulatory standpoint, someone that we don't have to necessarily fear about an influx of new laws or new regulations hitting the market or hitting the farm world, I think we brought in the right choice on that side. And if anything else, this election has proven that the rural part of America here that we have that has kind of been forgotten or assumed that they were, quote unquote, falling into line over these last few years, isn't. And a lot of people were really shocked by the Trump victory. When I saw some of my farmer friends on Twitter telling me that they were waiting in line in rural Indiana for an hour and a half, I knew that you weren't seeing an hour and a half worth of Hillary voters in BFE, Indiana. So I kind of started to question what we were going to see from a results standpoint, and sure enough, we have 2 a.m. Wednesday morning, we saw the world get shocked. We saw, I think I read somewhere, America's Brexit. That seemed a little dramatic to me, but what the hell, whatever makes it click-worthy, I guess, anymore.
Well, if you remember, the last time we talked, I said that it was going to be a Trump victory because I said people would not admit that they were going to vote for Donald Trump, but as it turns out, only 51% of women voted for Hillary Clinton, which goes to show you if they were so outraged by what he said. And again, I'm not saying that what he said was good. I mean, again, I'm not defending him. I'm just saying that when it comes down to it, and it's your life and your best interest, they're going to go where they think they have the best opportunity. What do you think about that?
Well, I think so. I think a lot of people decided to vote for Trump. I mean, when it comes down to it, and I kind of alluded to it the last time we discussed, I've been disappointed with some of the women's births, that it has been put in. I'm not a fan of Janet Yellen as the Fed chair, and I'm supposed to be because I'm a lady, right? I'm supposed to fall in line and be excited. Just the same as I wasn't going to be a Hillary voter simply because of her gender. I mean, at this point, I would have to say the women's suffrages or suffragettes of the early 20th century would have been absolutely blown away in the fact that women were expected to vote just simply on one line or in line with a gender as opposed to voting on what they believed. I mean, that's what the point of voting is taking what you believe or taking your principles and trying to find the candidate that most reflects those values and voting from there. I think the thing that really shocked me the most and should really shock people the most is in this past election is the 47% of people who stayed home. I mean, to me, that shows us nothing more than the two-party system's broken, or at the very least, half of the voting population decided that they were screwed either way, I guess you could say, and had determined not to. But just think if even half of those people had showed up and voted for a third-party candidate, we would have that third option that they've been complaining they're lacking. So there's so many levels to this from a political standpoint. But from a rural America or a regulatory standpoint, for the farmers, many of them feel the right candidate won when it comes to being able to do business and live their life here over the next 4 years.
Now, one of the problems that it looks like Trump might bring in right away is, of course, his distaste towards China and some of the regulations. Yeah. And of course, China threatens to come back and you know, do something with us. But of course, we are import four times more than we export. So it's really not going to hurt us. It may hurt in the short term, but in the long term, we would take back control. And I think that would actually be better. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I agree. I mean, it's just as with anything else. We talk about reducing debt or getting rid of waste or anything like that. You're going to have short-term negative impacts. I'm not a huge fan at this point in time, I don't get too excited when we hear about, kind of getting into a pissing match, so to speak, with China over some things, just because they are a huge buyer of our ag products. I mean, our pricing will rely on that. I would have to imagine that if China were to step out of the bean market, or tell us to take our soybeans and shove them, you know, we could lose $1, $2 pretty easily in soybean prices, just because we rely on them as an importer so much. Now, when it comes down to it, the easiest way to lose your head as a world leader is to make your people hungry. And so eventually, you know, after a lengthy amount of time, or maybe even a short amount of time, we would see China come back to the table, especially if a production problem were to happen with our South American competitors. They have no choice. But to look at it at face value and to understand that we could see some bumpy roads as a result of that, it's a little scary because it's an unknown. But it's definitely something that the farmers need to be aware of, that if we do see or do enter into some competitive talk or some hardball sort of negotiations with China, that we could see some pretty extensive market moves. I mean, all it takes is looking at what the copper market's done here over the last 10 days or so to really see what China's influence is in the market structure as a whole, I think.
Well, I agree with you on part. I think that, we're going to control, and I think that it's time that we stepped up and said, screw you. It's time to bring back the work to America. And if you want to charge us, nobody remembers that, you know, when you buy something from China, yes, labor is very cheap because of their currency, but also nobody ever counts in the freight, the duty, and other things to bring the goods back over here. So, you know, there's a lot of issues that need to be resolved. Now, certainly, if you put two gentlemen in a room or two ladies in a room and you worked out a deal and said, okay, let's work this out, it could be done. But of course, you've got, the hard-headed United States and the hard-headed Chinese or the Communism Party. But I actually think that if they fight it, I think there could be a big dent into communism. What are your thoughts?
I agree. I think when it comes down to it, it goes right back to what I said, where a hungry population is a dangerous population. And so they could try to fight it. But if you don't have that influx of protein supplies and things of that nature, it'll be very quick. I mean, let's just look at what we've seen happen in Russia or anywhere that tries to limit the amount of food availability or the ability to gain or gather cheap food. Eventually your population will stand up and say no. And once they do, then you have to make that determination, how you're going to proceed from there. To be honest, with Trump, if he really wants to, I mean, it won't be this way because it can't be this way, just because we won't, it's hard to correspond these two things, but to really play hardball with China and to fix things, we really need a secondary production hiccup in South America, because we need to be the only supplier.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought, because I want to get into it. That's a great point. Right. Let's get there. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bob Horowitz. We are with the goddess herself, the goddess of grains, Angie Setzer, Vice President at Citizens Elevator. And make sure when you miss an episode, you got to go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every day, as well as go to bubbatrading.com and check out some of the things that we have for you there. We're going to step out of a break. We'll be right back with more from Angie Setzer right after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Show Todd Bubba Horowitz with the Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator, the goddess herself, Angie Setzer. Angie, so you were telling us about that we need to kind of knock out South America. That's not what you said. I'm just paraphrasing in the way I'd like to hear it. Right. Go ahead and finish your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it really, when it comes down to it, in order to truly have the power, the suppliers of these bushels need to be limited. And so for us to come in, if we were to see South America have a record production season as estimated or projected right now, we would be double whammying the market. And I would hope that Trump's advisors would have enough wherewith to kind of pay attention to what we see develop from an overall global market structure before we make any moves that are too big. You know, and I'm not saying that because I want China to continue to push us around or to continue to push the global market around. I'm simply saying that from a farmer protectionist type standpoint, which when it comes down to it, you know, where our farmers are only a small percentage of the population. And sometimes the means will justify the end. The hard part for a grower is just determining or working through, you know, as those means are justifying the end. And so if they were to lose a significant amount of value in their soybeans, that could be troubling. I mean, just look at what has happened with the corn market. You know, it's difficult for us to find support due to the fact that China really is not a buyer of our corn at this point, because they've taken care of themselves enough over the last several years to maintain reasonable supply. Well, at least that's what they say.
Well, not right, and that's what they say. But we could actually, I mean, we still are the reserve currency. We still are the strongest in the world because we see our dollar spiking higher right now. Why is that? Well, it's not. It's because the foreign nations are buying U.S. dollars because they're afraid and they're fearful of what may happen because the yuan is crashing and there's a lot of trouble in South America. Now, we could actually, if we were that type of nation, which we're not, but we could actually put South America out of business as well, and we could become the sole creator and owner of all the grain products in the world if we chose to do that. But again, we would not do that. But I think that, you know, the other nations would fall in line trying to help us do what we need to do. Otherwise, they might have some issues because, again, who do they come to when they need help? They come to us. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's when it comes down to it. We're that, you go back into your high school days, you know, that super nice guy that the pretty girl always turned to when the boy broke her heart and he'd bend over backwards for her to make everything happen. And then he'd be dropped in the dust as soon as the next guy came along. I mean, that is who we are and that's who we've made ourselves. I mean, in a lot of ways, the world always turns to us as the policing force. The world always turns to us as the provider of cheap goods. And the world always turns to us to try to make sense of things. And unfortunately, that's put us into some pretty screwed up situations and kind of another day older and deeper in debt kind of livelihood on our part. And yeah, I mean, we could come out and be hard-nosed about it we have the ability to influence things, but then that makes us no more better than China or anything like that. I mean, really, when it comes down to it, we could beat them at their own game, every day and twice on Sunday. I hate to bring up the four-letter fair word, but you have to ask, how that works from a fairness standpoint.
Well, but again, you look around and have they been fair? No. I'm not saying anything. I just believe that the United States of America should be a little bit tougher and a little bit stronger and not be such pansies.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's just like a little bit off topic, but you have in Los Angeles and you have in Chicago, you have two mayors that are going to become sanctuary cities if they decide to deport some of the illegal criminals. And, that's ridiculous. And both mayors, they ought to just cut their funding and let them see how they're going to do with no money, because both are in trouble anyway. So what do you think about, what do you think of the sanctuary city crap? What's your opinion?
It blows my mind. I mean, honestly, and that's why you hear me kind of make that noise when I say fair. I hate the word fair. Nothing's fair. I mean, the first lesson I learned in my life is that fairness doesn't exist in the world. Sorry, fair. I mean, I think I was 3 years old the first time my parents told me that life wasn't fair. So that's not fair. Well, life isn't fair. You know, that's been ingrained in my upbringing. And I think that's rural America's upbringing as well, which is part of the reason we kind of look at these things and roll our eyes. The sanctuary city process really just kind of shocked me in the sense that, the amount of federal government aid these cities are relying upon and things of that nature. I mean, if we really wanted to take a hard-ass stance, you cut their funding. I mean, and then you really have people storming the streets and freaking out. But when it comes down to it, there's a reason that we have rules. Now, I do think that we need to figure out a better path to citizenship. I think when it comes down to it, from talking to my local farmers, I grew up in Michigan. We have a lot of migrant help. It's not like we have the rural population in the area surrounding Holland, Michigan, lining up to pick blueberries. We need to bring in these migrant workers to help us out, unless we see a change in mindset from the work space that we have. I mean, so we do need to come up with something there. But to keep criminals or to harbor criminals, it blows my mind. It honestly does. I there are so many things from a immigration standpoint that I will never understand. Why people would be against either figuring out ways to deport or incarcerate someone who's caught breaking the law, who's an illegal citizen. I do not understand the thought process of protecting someone like that. I will never get it. You cannot explain that to me enough in order to make it make sense. I'm sorry. Well, but to see these people come in and say they're going to be sanctuary cities, to me, I think the easiest way to nip that in the bud is to go ahead and cut funding and see how they survive then. Let them rely on these illegal immigrants that aren't paying into the coffer.
Now, do you have an opinion on all these protests that are going on regarding Trump?
Well, of course I have an opinion.
Well,
have you met me?
Would you like to express your opinion?
Well, no. I mean, when it comes down to it, I peaceful protest is great. When it comes to bringing attention to misdeeds or things that need attention brought to them. However, if you did not vote in last Tuesday's election and you are now taking part in a quote-unquote peaceful protest or busting the windows out of an Oldsmobile in Portland, you need to sit down and learn how it works. When you have 48% of the population that can vote not voting, and then you have all of these people rolling out and saying, not my president or something of that nature, it kind of makes me scratch my head. The biggest ability or the biggest source of voicing your opinion comes through being able to vote in the election. If you feel like you got screwed and that Hillary should be the president, or, a lot of these people, from what I understand, are pissed that Bernie didn't get the nomination. Well, there's ways to fix that. Unfortunately, you may feel that your voice has been hidden, but get to know your local government. Get to know your local or state representatives. Get to know your federal representatives. Our forefathers set it up in a way that we're supposed to have direct line or direct communication or direct influence as a populace on what takes place in Washington, D.C. Now, we've gotten away from that because we have this idea of ruling elite. Unfortunately, a lot of people of the right leaning will say that the Democrats are the only ones that come off as the elite group. That's not the case. Anyone that's in government, it seems at this point in time, aside from your few liberty based candidates, are the ones that think that it's their job to tell us how to live. It's not. I mean, if anything, I can hope that these protests would encourage some young people to get involved. Locally and be the change they want to see in the world. But I don't think that's the case. I mean, yesterday we saw a video of a student storming the Portland Mall. Most of them probably couldn't even drive there. I could understand if you feel that your voice hasn't been heard as a young person, but at the same time, life is not fair. And so I think we're getting away from the message that needs to be out there. And I think we're misdirecting our anger in a lot of ways. And at the same time, I think there's a level of influence with outside money coming in to try to raise issues in the populace. And this is one of them. I mean, I think you have a level of professional or people who are paid to
it's a protest. They're it's all BS. And it is, life is not fair. That is the words according to me. Well, it's the words according to the goddess right now. Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, vice president of Citizens Elevator. We're going to step out here for a break. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every day, as well as the Sporting Edge on Saturdays. And don't miss BubbaTrading.com, because obviously you know me. I don't have much of an opinion, but you'll probably find it there. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bob Morris. We'll be right back after the break with more from Angie, The Bubba Show. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, from Vice President at Citizens Grain, or Citizens Elevator. What's the name? You know, I've just lost my mind. Citizens Elevator.
Citizens Elevator, yeah.
I lose. I'm old. I can't help it. And it's all, cool. All the beating by the protesters. It's been killing me. I don't understand it. Now, I'm going to ask you a question, and this is one thing I really don't understand. Two things, okay? Number one, you've got the protesting, like, well, maybe after we lose a football game, we should have a protest. Maybe we can win it. Because now, why aren't these people, A, supporting what we have now because it's not going to change? Okay. But B, you have all these movie stars, Whoopi Goldberg, Samuel Jackson, Leonardo DiCaprio, and I don't know, some woman was bawling on TV on Monday, like the world was coming in. I forget her name, Gretchen or something like that, crying, I'm going to Spain. Why don't these people get the hell out? Who wants them here? I mean, again.
Well, yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Answer my two questions, please.
Well, I mean, to me, it comes down to it that, and it goes back to my whole, you know, parents raising me, life is not fair. They also raised me with the understanding that if you don't like something, you can either work to change it or shut up about it. Like, that was, I mean, so I guess that comes down to it. Also, if you said that you thought that you would hurt yourself if your bone wasn't sticking out, you obviously weren't injured. So I guess that was my youth. But, yeah, I mean, if you don't like, it's exactly what I was saying. If you don't like how the government works, if you don't like the representatives that are being offered, go ahead and start becoming a part of the cogs in the wheel. There's nothing that stops people from starting on local city council and working their way up. You know, I'm going to be completely honest. That was the one thing that attracted me to Sarah Palin, unfortunately, as I got to know her opinions on things. It was a little bit more questionable, but she got started and built herself her own career and became the governor of Alaska. Good for her. I mean, that still shows that it's possible out there in the world. You know, unfortunately, though, we have candidates that come in that say they're going to drain the swamp, you know, and that's been the Trump phrase here as of late. And so far, the cabinet doesn't look as though that swamp necessarily will be drained. You know, I'm kind of off in the weeds here. But when it comes down to it, if you don't like the choices that you have, do something to change it. Will it be difficult? Yes. Everything worth doing is not guaranteed to be easy. And so that's the approach that I take. I mean, I really, if you're just going out and causing destruction or writing about how angry you are on Facebook, you're really not doing anything to improve, you know, what life is going to be like for your children or the generations after. And so I really struggle with people who use their platform to spew hatred or bullshit, which most of those are wow, just spewing bullshit.
I mean, I was entitled.
It's like that Colin Kaepernick. You know, I'm taking a knee to fix social injustice, yet I refuse to vote.
Well, I think
it makes no sense.
I think I'm entitled to everything. I don't think I should have to go to work every day. I think I should just be given a package full of cash every day so I can go out and enjoy myself. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I would rather just take in a certain amount of money and not have to do anything. I think I've done enough in my 34 years. I'm over it.
All right. Well, there you go. So now let's get away from this nastiness of politics, because it's actually just annoying. And Colin Kaepernick and Mike Evans, of course, Mike Evans came out and apologized. Who gives a shit? He shouldn't have been kneeling in the first place. But so I understand you're coming to Chicago representing women in a women's ag or something like that. Tell me about that.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about it.
Women in Ag Conference. I will. It's the Executive Women in Ag Conference in Chicago here in a couple of weeks. One of my most favorite conferences, not because I like the specialized women, you know, the women only event, but there is in our industry a pretty large population of men. You know, I would venture that at least 90% of traders and people who are working in elevators and merchandising grain or anything like that are men in this industry. Of course, Twitter has kind of connected me with a lot of women who you don't hear a lot about, and that's awesome. But we do U.S. Farm Report, so we'll be discussing the fundamentals in the market, what we're looking at grain pricing-wise and things like that. And then I will be holding a breakout session where I'll talk to the ladies that are interested in how to build a marketing plan, you know, and how to get involved in their farms and operations and what they should be looking at overall from a market approach.
Now, when is it? Where is it?
It is at the Palmer House Hilton, I believe. Oh, gosh. I'm just going to get in the cab and be like, take me to this hotel in Chicago, the 30th of November, the 1st and 2nd of December. And then that'll wrap up there, like I said, the 2nd of December. And then the U.S. Farm Report will air that following weekend, the 3rd and 4th.
And how come I wasn't invited?
Well, it's because your attraction level would distract all of the women from learning. I don't know. Did I answer that? Right. Did I check in the mail?
Tommy Gassafi is going to be there. How come I'm not going to be there? I'm just curious.
That's what, I don't know. He probably limited it. I don't know. You're more than welcome to come.
I mean,
out.
You know, I could be transgender and use any bathroom I want. You never know.
That's exactly right. Oh, I can tell you that much, that as a man at a woman's conference, you will have no line in the bathroom. That is one of the most one of my favorite things about being a woman, anytime I have a speaking gig or anything like that, there is never a line in the bathroom. And that is not something that happens often for a girl. You know, like we usually are standing in multiple lines, and it's nice. I can walk in and out, and all the guys during the break are standing there waiting. So that is the one plus of that side.
Well, I might go in the women's bathroom. I could be, you know, I might take advantage of the law from President Obama. So,
well, that's just it. It's very nice in there. There's a chair, and it, you know, that's the nice part. You can sit down.
So, and this is now, I mean, obviously it makes sense that there's more men in farming than women at the moment. I mean, I'm not saying it's correct, but obviously, you know, just history, you know, that, you know, it's a lot of it's a strength job, right? I mean, would you agree with that if you're actual farming?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's something that it's hard to explain to, you know, your person that's not involved in it, I would say. It's not easy.
I mean, farming is probably one of the toughest jobs. And not because it's so much more work, but it is a lot of work. It is basically 7 days a week, and it is, you know, long, long days. And, you know, now, of course, you know, there is some time off if you're just in the grain spart because you get done for a little while. But basically, it's humping for, you know, a lot of time during the year. So it is not actually what we would call a piece of cake, right?
No, it's not. I mean, there are certain parts of it that you could say are somewhat easier, depending on certain times of year where you may see a lull. But it's really one of those things where there is never a time where you can feel like you've buttoned up and completed your projects. You know what I mean? Your to-do list is never done, because as soon as you get to the last item on your to-do list, you're starting over for the year. And so that's been one of the harder parts in the elevator side or the merchandising side for me is that no matter what the market is doing, every year is cyclical, in the sense that right now I'm in the middle of harvest time. I'm working to facilitate deliveries for my customers, you know, dealing with quality issues and things of that nature. Once harvest is done, then I'll start to focus on how I'm going to trade the grain that's in my facilities and work to trade the grain for my farmers, you know, and what the market structure is going to do, et cetera. And then we'll work through that for 10 months, try to figure out where we stand from an overall supply and demand situation. And then we start all over again September 15th. You know, so it's one of those things where time tends to fly by for you because it's different every day. But from an overall standpoint, it's the same, so to speak. And as a farmer, like I said, there's nothing that is ever completed in their year. I mean, they may finish that task, but they're just going to do it again, you know, several months later and start all over again.
And there's always a new task. So women in farming. So
yes.
You're looking to like create more people like yourself in the managing of the money part of it and make them more traders and things like that. What other opportunities do you see for women in farming?
Well, there's all kinds of opportunities for women in farming. I tell a lot of the wives of the customers that I work with or a lot of the women that show up at the Executive Women in Ag Conference, sometimes the women are the better marketers when it comes to the farm aspect of things, simply because they're not as connected emotionally to the crop. You know, they're able to see it as a cash generator, whereas some of the men that I work with become emotionally attached. And it goes back to my bushel baby theory, which I've been told by men in the industry that they would not be able to point that out. But as a woman, I can. So I guess that shows you the gender bias. But a lot of men have in-depth emotional connection with their grain, and they'll tell you it's because they're trying to maximize profit and things like that. But I joke that it's really they don't want to give their bushels away or sell their bushels only to find that they were worth more than what they thought they were. And so you'll see them hold on and even miss the marketing opportunities that they said they would sell at simply because they don't want to give up the control. And what I try to explain to them is they're always long. I mean, as a farmer, you are always long grain.
That's right.
Unless you're going to quit farming the next year, you're going to have more bushels to sell as the market continues to rally.
You're 100% correct.
And that's always been a struggle for them to kind of catch on to.
Well, they're always long, and of course, they always try to squeeze price. And of course, the other thing is farmers like to gamble a little bit. You know, it's like it's one of those things. And, you know, again, you're born, your nature, you have to be bullish. Otherwise, why would you borrow all the money to get that thing in the ground and take the risk, because you have to be a natural bull, and I agree with that 100%. And of course, that's really where the risk management has to come in, so that you can be a little bit more aggressive on where you want to get out, because if you have some protection, you're not going to be rushed out because you've got protection underneath it. So, and that's one of the big things we have. And this is Angie Setzer, Vice President at Citizens Elevator of Grains at Citizens Elevator. That's where I got confused. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every day, as well as the Sporting Edge on Saturdays. We're going to step out here for a break, but also check out Bubba Trading on your way. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. We'll be right back with more from Angie. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator, the Goddess of Grains on Twitter, at the Goddess. And so, Angie, we got a lot of things that go on in markets. And, you know, what is your take of how this whole thing works out as we move forward? Okay. Again, there's a lot of things you go through. And what are the steps and what are you seeing and how's it going to work out?
I mean, at this point right now, for a lot of guys, I would hope that they're marketing their soybeans as they go. And it goes back to the farmer being 100% optimistic. I mean, when we rallied 80 some cents off the low, got into that $10 futures mark all over again, up to $10 on the next year's beans and things like that. And still didn't have a lot of guys doing some selling because God knows what they were waiting for. So I'm a little concerned without a South American issue that you're going to see soybeans kind of languish here. You know, I think there is a risk premium in place if we were to lose a million metric ton or two from South America. Much more than that, we will probably see a bit of a rally. But at this point, with how things have gone and the history of La Nina impacts on Brazil and things like that, you know, as a farmer, I would be looking to sell, especially because most of them have produced a record crop and had significant yield increases, you know, and subsequent revenue per acre increases that can come from it. You know, if they're storing the beans to home, go ahead and hedge out in the May or the July. You know, the market's paying you carry to hold those things. From a corn and wheat standpoint, I think you're going to see some upside potential. I'm bullish wheat from here. I think we're too cheap. I think we're going to discover that the problems that we're seeing in the southern plains, the dryness there and in the southern portion of the soft red wheat belt, the dryness there is going to cause some pretty significant issues. And I know in my trade territory, it's been too wet to get stuff planted. So I had a lot of farmers that were planning on cutting back on their acreage 30% or so from last year just because of market conditions, and may have seen a further cut because they couldn't get the crop in the ground. It was just too damn wet. So the corn side of things, a lot of it will hinge on what we see happen with the second crop out of Brazil. There's talk that could grow, you know, due to the early start in planting and things like that. Our exports, though, have been solid. I'd like to see our shipments pick up, you know, now that soybeans are starting to soften a little bit. So I'm watching that. From an overall standpoint, though, from an elevator side, I'm enjoying the carry that the market is supplying. So I'm going to hold my grain back, you know, as long as I can and find good basis opportunities and pocket the 30 cents in wheat that's been offered. I mean, at one point in time, if you traded your wheat spreads correctly, you could have made 60 cents to hold it out into March. So as a merchandiser, I've done that. You know, so the pipeline itself may be skewed because the carry is there, but the one thing we are seeing in corn is that carry is not indicating a 2.4 billion bushel crop is out there. So I'll definitely be watching basis and how the spreads trade and subsequent quarterly stock numbers from the USDA. I just don't think the corn yield's there, and I think we see a rally as a result of it here in a few months.
I do agree, but I think corn's a little scary right where it's at here. I liked it 345 in D, so we broke that, but now it looks like 345 in March. What are your thoughts? You think can they bust them down a little bit, or are they going to be able to hold? I mean, they're still significantly from their lows, so we you know, we're still okay, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think today has been an indication. We're 9 cents off the low in today's trade, you know, here on Tuesday. We bought them 335 and three quarters on the D, 341 and a half is where we're currently trading. You know, I think that we tested the downside. We'll probably test again. You know, I think we'll probably troll along the bottom. I don't think we'll see a retest of old lows. If we were going to, I think it would have happened after last week's USDA increase of 2 bushel per acre and the dollar rally. Since we didn't see that take place, you know, we didn't test new lows after that. I think we would probably just trade range bound here, but it is scary right now because there isn't anything that can come out, you know, until the USDA brings quarterly stocks. If the USDA comes in and lowers quarterly stocks significantly, I mean, really when it comes down to it, aside from a South American production issue, that's the only thing the American farmer can hope for to really generate a corn rally until we start to discuss planted acres going forward into next year. So I think you could watch paint dry and have a more exciting trade than corn overall from a supply and demand perspective. Now, from a volatility perspective, just because of money flow, you could see it do some weird things. But I think at this point, like I said, unless the USDA comes out and surprises us with a major reduction in quarterly stocks, at this point, rallies will need to be sold, you know, similar to what you're seeing in cattle and hogs and things like that.
Well, I have a little bit of a disagreement with you. I think that the markets are far ahead of the USDA, and they've already priced in, you know, those numbers, just like the numbers last week. I said that, you know, I didn't even look at them. I didn't care because I think the markets are way ahead. I think the markets are way ahead of the news, and half the time the news is crap anyway. So I think that we're far too sophisticated today with the technology that it flows so fast that you could actually pay somebody. You know, and I'm sure I know the big banks do for things that they could actually have the report done before the USDA gets the report. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that we have the ability, and I've had a lot of conversations with traders and things that will tell you that the market already knows a lot more than what we want to give it credit for knowing. And so that's what always cracks me up when people act like the market is reacting to something that happened 2 weeks ago. The reality is the market's paying attention to what's going forward. And so to me, that partial strength that we're seeing right now in corn, you know, versus testing the 318 low side of things, you know, I can't argue with you in that sense. Maybe they do know what we don't know. I mean, after all, you're looking at spreads, and a 2.4 billion bushel carryout, which is what we're supposed to see in corn, should generate full carry. Full commercial carry, which in the deeps to March is 13, 14 cents. Actually, it's closer to 15 or 16, I believe, once you factor everything in. But in any event, we're trading at 8 cents. So the market structure itself is not necessarily telling you it wants to keep the corn out of the pipeline, which makes zero sense, you know, compared to where we supposedly are from an overall supply versus demand standpoint. So I cannot argue with you. The one thing that would concern me, though, in that same scope of things is the futures price in beans trading up or rallying, you know, compared to the spreads widening, would show me that perhaps we do have more beans than what we have demand here until we get further out into the summer months.
It could be, but I just look at beans. They're just stuck in a big old trading range from 960 to 1020. And it used to be 940 to 10 in Nov. Yeah. Now that we're in Jan, I think that range just stays. And I think, you know, I look at the market in different ways, and I just look at markets in how the technical aspects work. I don't really care what the news is, because the news in my eyes is already priced in anyway. So either it's priced in before it, or if they miss, it's priced in afterwards. But that tells you the whole story. And, you know, we've been 18 weeks, I believe it's been, that soybeans have been in this range. And I don't see any reason that's going to change now. Do you?
No, unless the South American crop comes on with a vengeance. I mean, that's the only thing at this point in time that would change the overall global structure. But even then, we're factoring in a record soybean crop out of Brazil and Argentina both. You know, the one thing that I definitely continue to question, and everyone looks at me like I'm crazy, is the Argentinian carryout being projected at over a billion bushel. I think that's bullshit. I don't think that's there. I mean, if Argentina carryout was over a billion bushel, and you saw the currency conversion rates change as they did, and you saw soybean meal trade the way that it did, and things of that nature this past year, there's no reason that Argentine soybean crush capacity should only be running at 80% of full. You know, they keep saying they can't find the beans, but the USDA keeps saying there's a billion bushel sitting there. You know, you trade that out, and it makes a huge difference between what happens from an overall standpoint. You take that out of the global numbers, and all of a sudden it doesn't really matter what Brazil does, you know, from an overall production standpoint, because of the fact that you're a hell of a lot tighter than what's anticipated, you know. And so, in soybeans, I think there's been a significant amount of manipulation in the numbers that the USDA puts out. I think some people do trade those numbers, and so that's what makes it difficult to see this move to a new high anytime soon. But from an overall standpoint, it all comes down to the level of trust you put into the market and how price is determined, you know, where we sit.
I put none. This is the Bubba Show. We have been with Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizen Elevator, the goddess of grains. Angie, always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I always enjoy it.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. Make sure you go to thebubbatradingfirst.com, bubbatrading.com, and then go to libertytalk.fm and download the show. We'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same station. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much. We'll see you later.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.